Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Monday, May 1st. The draft is officially over. I hope everybody has recovered from a draft weekend that was exciting. I feel mildly recovered. I feel great that the draft is in the rearview mirror. I've said this a lot on the, not just from a schedule perspective, but I said this a lot on the podcast. Like, I love post-draft analysis so much more than pre-draft takes because we actually know where these guys are. We can really project them well, especially from a fantasy angle, which is all about this show today. That's what we're doing here. And joining me to do that, I've got two absolute powerhouses, the best folks I could possibly imagine for this episode. First of all, it's Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Things are good. I actually got to spend one night of the draft as just a pure meatball Bears fan at a Bears bar watching picks, which was great. I haven't had that experience in years. It was awesome. I'm excited.
Hell yeah, man. There's a lot for you to be excited about. Maybe not as excited about his team's draft, but certainly always great to have along is Dalton Del Don, who I actually texted over the weekend. You know, I don't text anybody. Dalton and I barely text, but every now and again, we'll send something back and forth to each other. Dalton, I sent you a video of Brian Daboll ripping a vape in the Giants draft room, which I hadn't seen until I was in the car yesterday going to shock a baseball game. So Dalton, Brian Daboll, also on our crew. What's up?
Another coaching legend with McDaniel. I had not seen that video yet either. I appreciate it. My wife is like old news when I told her that. But I want to point out, I appreciated both of your texts this weekend. But I want to point out the first one on Friday night, I was miserable, stuck in traffic outside of Chase Center after spending too much money to watch the Warriors get blown out. And then the other was during game 7 on Sunday when I was like nervous wreck. So apologies, I didn't give you a proper response, but I know you're so out to lunch as far as the NBA and MLB. I was just really into my Warriors when you were texting me both of those times, but appreciate it nevertheless.
Yeah, very understandable. Andy, I just texted Dalton on Friday night, just kicker exclamation point.
I was already so down bad, Warriors blown out, and he's telling me my team's drafting a kicker in the third round. It was like, man, way to kick a guy when he's down. No pun intended.
What else needed to be said? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if I had any awareness of what was going on in the NBA world at that time, I probably would have passed on literally kicking you while you were down. But yeah, my apologies, pal. That was my lack of other sports knowledge showing through there. But guys, we've got a packed show today. What we're going to do with this whole program here is we're going to sort every team's draft class into three groups: most impactful, maybe impactful, and little to no impact in terms of their year one fantasy appeal. But before we do that, I do want to know from both of you guys sort of just like overarching thoughts, you know, quick one liner to describe this draft overall, because I think it ended up being a really fun pre-draft process, but the days of the draft actually were really interesting as well. So Andy, I'll start with you.
Man, I guess if you just want a one-liner on this, it's probably for fantasy purposes, two absolute locks and six maybes, and then a whole bunch of dudes. I don't know. This didn't strike me as the, like, I just published, we're no longer in one liner territory here, but I just published like a sort of two round rookie dynasty mock, and it just like, it falls into place, I think, so neatly for like eight picks. And then you could jumble the names in almost any order you like.
Yeah. Jumbled is a good, like, one word description of this draft, because I think a lot of running back rooms are very jumbled now. I think some receiver rooms are maybe some clarity there, but of course we'll get into it. Dalton, what about you?
Kickers are the new market inefficiency. I mean, you got the greatest coach of all time trading up to get one. We have the current greatest coach in the NFL drafting one in the third round. So clearly that's my one liner for you.
Literally, probably like every other NFL podcast today is going to talk about the, all these like quarterbacks that went in the top 50, 150 picks. I think it was like a record amount of day 300 top 150 quarterbacks, because everybody else is like chasing the market inefficiency at backup quarterback, or maybe they're looking for the next Brock Purdy if they're really lucky.
Yeah, we did that last year. See, we're ahead of the game. Niners right, did yeah, that last right. year. Yeah.
Right. The Niners are just ahead of the game. It's all about kickers now. So that's good stuff, Dalton. That's why we have you here, is to point out, like, to think two steps ahead. Everybody else is playing checkers. You're playing chess. That's great. That's why you're here. Let's jump into these teams. And we're going to start with the least impactful, just to kind of blow through these. First one I've got here, the Cincinnati Bengals. Wide receiver Charlie Jones, who I do think is interesting for the future, but not in year one. Chase Brown, running back in the fifth round. They took another receiver out of Princeton in the sixth round. Boys, any disagreement here? Andy, I know you're ready to push back on this as a potential year one impact team.
Yeah, this is literally the one team, and it happens to be the first one on the list, where I thought, you know, at least we could hit him with a maybe. And it's not that I think, you know, I think Charlie Jones is obviously really good. He had, you know, he caught over 100 balls last year at Purdue. He's somebody who was at Iowa for a minute, then realized what an offensive wasteland it was, and he needed to get out of there if he was ever going to go to the league. And he goes to Purdue and just has an absolute supernova season. He was terrific. And I think, you know, he's probably a year away, but he's probably a year away from taking the Tyler Boyd role, which obviously a pretty rich one. Cincinnati last year, fifth in the NFL in passing, I believe tied for second in passing touchdowns. So it's a pretty ripe environment. I think Charlie Jones, the player, is going to stick. I also just like, I don't know that he'll have any kind of impact in year one. I don't know that he'll have an impact down the road at all, but I think that Chase Brown was one of the most underrated players in at least skill players in the entire draft. I cannot be convinced that there were five running backs better than him last year. He went over 100 scrimmage yards against literally every opponent. Over 160 against Michigan, over 160 against Iowa. Like, he faced good defenses and he just ran right through them. I think that kid is really good. And it's kind of up in the air as to how much the Bengals actually like their current running back, right? So he's a fifth rounder, probably doesn't mean anything, but I think Chase Brown is pretty interesting.
No, that is a good one to push back on, because the running back room after Joe Mixon is pretty wide open. And again, the situation with Joe Mixon is kind of up in the air as well. Mm-hmm. It sounded like they want him to either take a pay cut or get off the roster. Now, I think at this point, he probably just takes a pay cut and we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Chase Brown, definitely somebody to keep an eye on. And Charlie Jones, we're not just saying he's the slot receiver because he's like an undersized white. He really does like have he played a lot outside in college, but he does not beat press man coverage, but he's a really, really good zone beater. I tweeted out his reception perception chart over the weekend. Like, he could definitely be a future slot receiver for them. But I do like the Chase Brown pushback. Let's move to the LA Rams here. Another team, I think, probably little to no impact. I mean, they were one of the teams that took a backup quarterback. It was Stetson Bennett in the fourth round, 36th overall. They took an offensive guard. My God, they needed offensive linemen. I like Puka Nacua quite a bit, but he's a fifth round pick. Maybe he jumps up on a light wide receiver depth chart. Zach Evans really fell in the draft all the way to the sixth round. Their running back room is a little up in the air after Cam Akers, but Dalton, any pushback to these guys potentially being year one impact? I think these are maybe sleepers down the road, but as much as I like Puka, I don't know that he's necessarily going to be a stud in the first year here.
Before I hit the Rams, I just want to circle back on the Bengals that Mixon could quietly be one of the biggest offseason fantasy winners here if he does get a restructured contract in return. Samaje Perine's gone, and they didn't spend a draft pick on a running back until the fifth round. So could be big news for Mixon potentially there. And before we go any further, just want to say I'll have some hot takes later, but I don't want to also pretend that I follow college even close to as much as Andy. So especially when we get to these deeper guys, I'll listen to you guys more. But no, I don't have any big takes on the Rams here. Interesting that Bennett went in the fourth when he was actually favored, I believe, slightly to go undrafted. But yeah, no real thoughts on these other guys.
Yeah, Stetson Bennett's interesting, just as a potential backup there. Obviously, Matthew Stafford's dealing with injuries, stuff like that, but we'll keep an eye on that one. New England Patriots, Andy, Kayshon Booty was a big name. He ended up going in the sixth round. I thought his film was not very good, really at all, even in 2021, even in 2022. Obviously, the rookie year or his freshman year is what it is, but I think the NFL clearly agrees there's a lot of red flags with this guy from an off-field perspective, from an on-field perspective. He goes in the sixth round, and that was really New England's one. Like, they took another receiver out of Liberty, Demario Douglas, in the sixth round, but I don't think we're seeing either of these guys. As much as wide receiver is a big need for New England, Andy, I don't think either of these guys are making a big impact.
Well, obviously, when the Patriots draft a receiver, we need to take notice because that usually goes well. I agree with you here. It's really hard to make a case. They had Juju in the offseason. That was nice enough. I don't think this is a passing environment that can support more than one sort of useful fantasy asset. So not super interested here.
New York Jets. Kind of same thing. Israel Abanaconda is really interesting. Big time athlete, big guy. Sort of some Isaiah Pacheco-ish to his game, but he's on a depth chart that obviously has Breece Hall, who might start off the year slow, but I think eventually gets ramped up. They have Michael Carter on that depth chart as well. He could be a guy that plays special teams for them and maybe get some opportunity. Maybe I'm underrating that, but I don't think we see him a ton in year one. And I love Zach Kuntz out of ODU, obviously. Big time athlete, but he's a 7th round pick on a loaded tight end depth chart. So I think this is another one we can say is probably not a year one impact. But San Francisco 49ers, I do have them here, Dalton. Although, you know, Jake effing Moody, bro, obviously 3rd round pick, he could be what the top 10 kicker in fantasy this year. So give your state on the 49ers here, the big kicker. Dalton, I love, did you see the call with Kyle Shanahan where he called Jake Moody and said, we took you in the 3rd round and we didn't take a running back, so we must really love you.
Yeah, jokes, but there's total truth in that, though. It's not like we can complain. He would have just wasted a pick on another slow running back. Here's the deal. The Niners are turning 19 of 22 starters. They didn't have another pick until the 5th round. They thought he'd be gone, which maybe he would have if another kicker went in between. Kicker is, it's silly as it is, it's important in a team that's going to be playing a lot of close games, whatever. But, and Robbie Gould is gone, so I get the justification, and especially when you can rationalize it with, well, at least it wasn't another wasted running back pick. But yeah, it's a little crazy to see a kicker go. The last one that went that high was Robert, I can't say his last name, Aguayo. Aguayo. That did not end well. But, you know, kickoffs are important too. If he can do that, the Niners really struggle there. Gould, you know, in his age was there. Yeah. So if he can boot those touchbacks, it wouldn't be the worst if he's good. He just has to be good, you know. So that's yeah, there'll be a bunch of busts in round three at every position. So the key here is if he's actually up to the task more so than the actual position.
I will say that, like, we all had jokes about the Niners taking a kicker, but this is such a flex because they are loaded, right? Like, I can't even tell you off the top of my head what they desperately need other than kicker. It is just such a two-team race in the NFC. It's ridiculous.
It's amazing too that they can do stuff like this, and you know that's kind of wacky. And I'm saying wacky to be nice, but you know they do some weird stuff every year, and they're still as good as they are. I mean, they have burned the running back stuff is funny because like it was Joe Williams, then it was Trey Sermon, and then it was TDP, like 3rd, 4th round picks on running backs that they hate in like 9 months later. So I guess Jake Moody, if he turns out to be really good, it's a good pick.
It's also
the real Niners move here would be to actually draft Moody in the 3rd round and then decide to go with a different kicker when the regular season starts. Right?
Just bring back Robbie Gould. Let's move into the fun teams here. That was great. We got through the slog there. Let's move into some teams that are going to have the most impactful drafts, I think, from a fantasy perspective in year one. And let's start at the top. Atlanta Falcons, probably the most impactful draft. They take Bijan Robinson in the top 10 picks. They take Matthew Bergeron as an offensive lineman in the 2nd round. Their offensive line is already pretty good, but a little more depth there is nice. And, you know, he could compete to start on the inside as well. So, boys, Dalton, I'll start with you because I'm looking for a hot take here, but there really is no hot take for Bijan Robinson because he's a 1st round pick in fantasy this year. And I don't really see how you can push back on that with the landing spot, the talent, everything there. So I'm looking for a hot take here from you, Dalton, but I don't really know that there is one.
Is having him as my RB3 a hot take ahead of Barkley and Eckler? Only McCaffrey and Jonathan Taylor I'm ranking ahead of Robinson as of now. I mean, an elite prospect with big time receiving ability, joining an Atlanta system that ranked 1st in PFF's run blocking unit last year, returning 4 offensive linemen. What's not to like? Yeah, playing indoors on a team that runs 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and he's an awesome talent. I mean, their running backs combined last year for like 4.8 yards per carry with, you know, there was some impressive, obviously CPAT's good, but man, this is a top 10 draft capital, an elite talent. He's going to not last past any 1st round of fantasy drafts, like I said, and I'm ranking him as a top 3 back right away.
Andy, where are you at?
Yeah, I've got him in essentially the same spot. I think it's a much easier to argue that Bijan should be the number one overall pick than to argue that he should fall outside of the first round. Right. Like you can't. I mean, I don't think you can compare him to just any old first round running back either. For me, you know, like I start thinking about the guys who in the past I've thought could step into the league and have this kind of impact. And it's, you know, it's Saquon in 2018 and it's Zeke Elliott in 2016 and it's Adrian Peterson in 2007. Right. Like, I just think he's in that. I think he's in that class of runner. I also thought that, you know, everything about Bijan is really well talked about. I'm not breaking any new ground here, but his tape as a receiver is phenomenal, right? Like mm-hmm. the highlight catches that guy pulled in. Not that I necessarily expect Atlanta to deliver like 60-70 targets or anything like that, but he's a wonderful receiver too. He just never needs to come off the field. I agree with Dalton. I think, and honestly, he's going to see more work than Christian McCaffrey this year. He's going to get more touches than McCaffrey. I don't think it would be a surprise if he finished with more touchdowns than Jonathan Taylor. Like I can build the case for him as the number one overall pick. And I think he's a pretty clear number one overall pick in Dynasty.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's really no conversation there. Even in a super flex format, as much as I love Anthony Richardson, I still think you got to take Bijan Robinson there. And yeah, I know there are, like, we're saying this so casually, and I know there are people listening to this and like want to rip their headphones out, you know, saying like, this guy's never played a down in the NFL. How can you say you like the first overall pick or a top three running back? But the setup is so, so good. He's so, so good. Just everything. This is not like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who, you know, when Damian Williams, I believe it was, opted out of the season in 2020, he got pushed up into the first round because he was playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. There's obviously a difference between the Falcons offense and the Chiefs offense, but there's a huge difference between Bijan Robinson as a prospect and CEH. And boys, I am absolutely ready to become like the biggest Arthur Smith defender on planet Earth. I know that like the initial, and you saw it all over fantasy Twitter on, you know, Friday morning, Thursday night, like, oh, this is just a commitment to boomer ball offense with Arthur Smith. But if you look at the guys like who have actually played real quarterback for Arthur Smith, and that's Matt Ryan in 2021, this is what kills me, is that we even have like a season of Falcons offense without Marcus Mariota that people just completely forget about. Yeah, they threw like 24 times a game with Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota was so bad as a starting quarterback. Like, I think he was the worst starting quarterback that wasn't Baker Mayfield in Carolina or Zach Wilson for the Jets. Like, he was that bad. Matt Ryan averaged like 33 pass attempts in 2021 because he's a real quarterback. Ryan Tannehill was, you know, hovering around 27 to 30 in his starting years for the Tennessee Titans. Even Desmond frickin' Ridder was at 28.8 to end last year. So as long as Arthur Smith has a real quarterback, I think we can get a real functional NFL offense here because the schematic stuff is great. The personnel usage is great. And really, if you look at this depth chart right now, it's Drake London. It's Kyle Pitts. We know they added Jonnu Smith. The other receivers are like Mac Hollins and Scotty Miller and Frank Darby. So we could be looking at a very concentrated target tree between Drake London, Kyle Pitts. Bijan Robinson probably fits in third there, and I think we're going to get enough passing volume. And the passing volume is key here for a running back to be really good in fantasy. Like, we don't want this to be a boomer ball offense for Bijan Robinson to hit the ceiling we're talking about.
Can't say enough about this offensive line as like a run blocking group too. Like, that was, it's just one of the things that jumps out when you watch Tyler Algier last year, how often he just got a free run at the line of scrimmage. And now we're going to do that with Bijan Robinson over 300 touches. I'm looking forward to it.
And they spent a second rounder on another offensive lineman. Now we just need Desmond Ridder to be competent.
Right. Yeah. That is the thing. Like, I'm saying, a real quarterback. I think Desmond Ridder can be pretty good. I think he, at the very least, he could be functional. Like, Mariota was not functional last year. Ridder was at least functional to end last year, and you saw that translate in Drake London's production as well. All right, next draft class here, Baltimore Ravens. They really only took one guy of note, Zay Flowers. And I love Zay Flowers. I said a lot about Zay Flowers. I'm really excited about this Ravens offense. I'm ready to get my heart broken by injuries, boys, but Odell Beckham, Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, that's a really good trio. So, Dalton, I'll start with you. how are we feeling about the newly signed Lamar Jackson and this new offense with Todd Monken and a receiver core that's just unlike anything we've ever seen, really ever seen in Baltimore, but certainly not in the Lamar years?
Yeah, not sure Zay Flowers is going to make a major fantasy impact right away, but it couldn't have gone better this offseason for Lamar Jackson. I saw him originally going lower than Trevor Lawrence in some fantasy drafts, but you got to move Jackson back up with his rushing ability and now with these weapons and the new offensive coordinator. So yeah, just terrific. Adding Beckham, hopefully a healthy Bateman, and now Zay Flowers, just an awesome offseason for Lamar.
This is one of the most interesting teams as we head into preseason and camp and all that, right? Because like everything they've done, in the offseason, everything certainly that they've done over the last few days suggests this is going to be a passing team, right? Or at the very least, this is where we're not going to see the same old Ravens that, you know, come in around 480 pass attempts or whatever, and they're near the top of the league in rushing attempts, right? Like, I wouldn't expect that from Todd Monken. And I don't know. You look at the Beckham addition. I don't know what Beckham's got left, right? Like, that's right. The other really interesting thing here. Two ACLs is not, that's a lot to come back from. So I don't know that we'll, you know, can he just be the version of Odell Beckham that we saw in Cleveland? If he is, and Bateman comes back healthy and Flowers is a thing, like this is really fun in a hurry, and that but theoretically opens some things in the ground game as well. So should be a really exciting offense. I'm looking forward to it, but they're one of those teams where like we don't have the answers yet, but it's really fun to speculate.
Yeah, 5 months ago, we were looking at a Ravens team that had that had Greg Roman as the offensive coordinator. That's boomer ball offense. That's like 1990s sort of passing game designs by Greg Roman. And like Devin Duvernay is the second most relevant target like getter there in Baltimore. Now he's maybe their receiver four. Behind all these guys, again, if they stay healthy. And I don't think adding Zay Flowers is like a total death nail to Rashad Bateman either, who's been really, really good. They just need him to stay healthy. They need him to be on the field. I think that you could tell me that any of these three guys is the best receiver in Baltimore this year, and I'd be willing to believe it.
Isaiah Likely's intriguing too as well. It's why I really love J.K. Dobbins. I'm going to rank him as a top 15 back, even though they don't throw him the ball. And yes, Jackson's going to steal out of goal line carries. I think a healthy Dobbins with a very little competition with that offense in that offense is really going to produce some big fantasy numbers.
Okay, next team up, Buffalo. They make a big splash on night one by taking Dalton Kincaid to mix in with Dawson Knox. Dawson, Dalton, DK, Charles McDonald and I talked about this. That's going to be confusing. Their skill sets are also, I think, different enough. Charles kind of pushed back on that, but I think their skill sets are pretty different. First round pick for him, they take Osiris Torrance as a guard in the second round. Their only big receiver investment was Justin Shorter, who is not short at all. He's huge. It took him at 150th overall. Maybe they get more out of him than Florida did with that messy offense there. They also signed Latavius Murray this morning. So Andy, Dalton Kincaid, obviously we don't expect a ton out of rookie tight ends, but I think they view him as their big slot receiver. Nice to see them get like a big road grading guard, and they add Latavius Murray. This is another team, I think, with their moves has told us that they want to take some of the rushing load off of Josh Allen and be more of like a actual adult running team. But Dalton Kincaid obviously is the big news here.
Yeah, Kincaid, the big addition here, and I think you're right. I think they probably do just view him as a large slot, right? Which is what we see from a lot of tight ends who get really, really interesting for fantasy purposes. They gave Dawson Knox a fair amount of money not that long ago, so it was, I can't say it wasn't a surprise, but it's a little bit of an indictment of the receivers that we might have expected something from last year, Shakir. Isaiah McKenzie, right? Like they just, nobody next to Stephon Diggs, with all due respect to Gabe Davis, has really lit it up exactly. I think Kincaid's a fun weapon. Like, incidentally, I was going through not just his game logs, but you know, some of the tape on Dalton Kincaid. It's funny how many prospects in this draft class just absolutely had blow up hilarious performances against USC. That defense was really a thing. Like Kincaid had 16 catches and 234 yards against USC. It is just clowning them. Everybody seemed to erupt against USC. Anyway, it was a like fun, fun film to watch. And I think he does have like, I put, and this is not just my Iowa bias, but maybe it's a little bit of Iowa bias. I have Sam LaPorta a little bit ahead of him in terms of just like first year relevance, but I think there is definitely a path for Kincaid.
What do we think though? Like, could he, producer Colin asked in the chat, could he be like a top 12 tight end this year? Because Dalton, your boy Gabe Davis, comes away pretty unscathed this offseason, unless they trade for DeAndre Hopkins later. But we know how much they needed help behind Stephon Diggs there. And it's tough. Rookie tight ends are always a little troubling, but I could see him getting like 60 to 70 targets this year. And in this offense, if he's good, that might be enough.
Yeah, Kincaid's expert consensus rank right now is tight end 14. It makes sense to me. I guess tight ends traditionally drafted that high. Their target floor is about 60 targets. Does this hurt Shakir's sleeper status in the slot there possibly? But yeah, given the amount of flops at tight end, Kincaid's going to be drafted as a borderline top 12 fantasy tight end in this offense. And if he's going to be treated as more of a slot guy than anything else. So yeah, absolutely. It's a decent fantasy landing spot, even with, despite Dawson Knox's presence. The running back situation here looks ugly though, with Damian Harris and Latavius Murray added to James Cook and Hines. So that doesn't look great for fantasy purposes. That's for sure.
All right, let's move to Carolina. Obviously they took Bryce Young first overall. We've talked about Bryce Young 1,000 times. The interesting pick they made, I've been saying this all off season, man, just 39th overall pick, earmark it for a wide receiver, do kind of the T. Higgins to Joe Burrow thing. Well, they did it. They took Jonathan Mingo out of Ole Miss. I've talked a lot about Mingo on the podcast, that he does not have like the college resume that you think. Like, he has 800 yards last year. That was a career high. There's been some injuries, been stuff like that. I think he is their big slot receiver, though. You know, I've said that his reception perception data, from a route perspective, from a contested catch perspective, from an after catch perspective, and even like he played outside at Ole Miss. Amon-Ra St. Brown played outside at USC. Their profiles are so, so similar. I could see him playing that role for this team with two receivers outside. Adam Thielen's been mostly an outside guy the last few years. DJ Chark's an outside guy. You know, Terrace Marshall, outside guy, if he beats out DJ Chark, which I think is possible. But all these guys, you know, Thielen as a declining player, and then Chark as an injured player, and Marshall is just not a very good player. Like, they're all guys that don't get separation. I could see Bryce Young and Jonathan Mingo just piling up production as a slot player. So, Andy, you said you did a dynasty like mock draft. Where do you end up putting Mingo? Because I'm a big fan of his game, even though there are some people that just don't like him at all. And obviously the collegiate resume is not what you want.
Yeah, that's the thing. You'd obviously want greater production, especially from a guy who stuck around for 4 years. But I did have him, you know, as he's outside like that first eight or nine. But I did have him as at number 11 in my first go round of ranks. This is another receiving core where it's a little bit. It's not like Baltimore, in that Baltimore is, I think, a much more talented receiving core than this one. But like, I don't know how to sort this hierarchy, right? And Mingo might be at the top of it. I mean, I don't know why Mingo can't lead this team in receptions. I don't know why he can't be one of those rare guys that actually has more production almost immediately in the NFL than he ever did in college. It's, you know, is he going to be a big slot in the style of Amon-Ra St. Brown, or is he going to be a big slot in the style of Chase Claypool? That I don't know. But this is wide open for him. And he honestly, like, it doesn't seem great to be tied to a first year quarterback necessarily, but the competition for targets here is about as easy as it gets in the NFL. So I think he probably can take advantage. I don't know that this team doesn't just want to hold you to 17 points and run the ball. That's possible too.
Yeah. Miles Sanders, they didn't draft a running back. He's a pretty big winner coming out of this. So Dalton, any Panthers takes?
No, you guys said it just as wide open as it gets in the wide receiver depth chart. Even Hayden Hurst is the team's tight end one. And even if Bryce Young isn't ready, they have competent Andy Dalton behind him too. So it's certainly a good situation for Mingo. And normally I hate talking about contracts, but Miles Sanders is guaranteed like $13 million this year, and the Eagles are paying Penny and Swift a combined $3 million. It's crazy.
yeah. No, it is crazy. But he's got a clear runway. Where do you guys rank Miles Sanders? Like I agree with you, Andy. I think they're going to be pretty run heavy. No real other running backs of note on the depth chart. Chuba Hubbard, I think we're about done with that. So pretty interesting for Miles Sanders. Where do you guys have him ranked?
He's my RB 19. He's ECR's 18. He's a top 20 back now. With that contract, I mean, he's going to get a lot of touches.
Yeah, I'm probably propping this up. I've actually got him as RB14 because I just it's a what is the competition for touches? There is none.
All right, next team up here, Detroit Lions. They're obviously really interesting. Jahmyr Gibbs, they take in the first round. Charles and I talked about that on the recap podcast. I'm curious where you guys end up ranking him for fantasy because he's very fascinating. You mentioned it, Andy. Sam Laporta, tight end. Yeah. Out of that great Iowa offense, baby. But they made a pretty big investment with him at 34th overall. That he was really their only pass catcher of note, too. And behind Amon-Ra St. Brown, they have Jameson Williams who's suspended for six damn games. And really, they have Josh Reynolds, Marvin Jones. Like, Laporta could be really interesting right away. And they take Hendon Hooker to get that veteran backup behind Jared Goff that they probably needed there. No, but he's a nice developmental guy. We won't see him in year one, most likely. He's not going to really challenge Jared Goff. But Andy, Gibbs and Laporta, two guys that could be really big difference makers in year one here.
Yeah, right off the bat, the reaction of that front office and coaching staff to the Gibbs pick was hilarious. I'm sure people have seen the video, but yeah. You know, it's always funny to watch, you know, the war room react to a pick, but holy cow, were they in on Gibbs. And it immediately, obviously, it was a statement about DeAndre Swift. And this was like the first major re-ranking that I did in, on draft night originally. I think they have big plans for him. Obviously, they threw some money at David Montgomery as well. I don't think that Gibbs is like at that sort of size line where I don't think anybody would project him for like a full featured role anywhere. Right. But I think in tandem with David Montgomery, that can be really, really fun. That can be really, really good. He was, again, I think Bijan Robinson was better at everything than any running back in the class, but I think Gibbs is a great receiving prospect. And he's going to be plenty of fun. And if he's getting, I don't know, 12 to 14 touches a week, that's going to, I mean, who gets that much more in today's NFL? I think he's going to get really interesting. I've got him as my RB24 right now. And that might be, I don't know, maybe that's too bearish. Maybe I should be a little bit more into him because it's going to be a fun offense. As for Laporta, like, we joked about it on Twitter a little bit, but that guy had over 650 receiving yards for the Iowa effing Hawkeyes last year. For Laporta to have done that, first of all, he did most of it after the catch. He was a miracle worker after the catch. It's not like he was seeing like deep downfield routes or anything like that. Like, his highlights are really fun. And then the Lions tight ends had like 12 touchdowns last year, and he is immediately the best of them, I think. So, I think there's a pretty clear, like, he's somebody who should rank a little bit higher than Kincaid, because we know that, like, you know, when we start talking about tight ends, like 5 through 12, it's all about touchdowns anyway. It's not going to surprise me if Sam Laporta finishes with 6 or 7 TDs.
Yeah. Laporta had 657 yards of like 2,000 for the entire team. So, you do the math there. That's like 32% of the damn team yards there. So he was a stud there. Dalton, where do you have like Jahmyr Gibbs in your early fantasy rankings?
I love this landing spot. I have Gibbs as my RB14. DeAndre Swift was a top 20 fantasy back in points per game last season in half PPR and obviously full PPR. He played 41.7% of the snaps. And he was hurt for most of those. The team hated him. This team, as Andy pointed out, obviously loves Gibbs.
Yeah.
Ben Johnson's returning at OC. Lions ranked top 5 in yards per play, in points per game, easily led football in points per game at home. I just love this setup with the defense. I won't bore you with the numbers, but Gibbs is a special receiving back. His numbers are really, really good as a receiver. And now he has top 12 draft capital. Jameson Williams targets are gone now. It's suspended. DJ Shark is gone and Swift is gone. So Gibbs is going to get targeted a ton. And you like him a little bit more in full PPR, but I'm ranking him as a top 15, even in half right now. Maybe that's too aggressive, but man, it looks like just such a terrific setup. Like I said, Swift was top 20 last year in playing 41% of the snaps, and the Lions hated him.
Hated him.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did hate him. Obviously, we'll talk about the trade to Philadelphia here in a little bit. But I think that Jahmyr Gibbs was just already the actualized version of what DeAndre Swift was in theory. And I think the Lions bought into that, which is why, as Dalton said, they hated DeAndre Swift. So,
and David Montgomery is going to take a bunch of carries. Don't get me wrong. But Swift did that last year with Jamal Williams leading the world in rushing touchdowns. So,
yeah. Yeah, I definitely think David Montgomery's got a lot less, because part of the appeal of him was, oh, he could take some passing down work from DeAndre Swift because they don't like Swift. And he's a passing down back more so than Jamal Williams has been in recent years. That is probably not going to happen anymore. So you could really hate on the Lions for like, you know, putting a ton of resources. Like they give David Montgomery $6 million per year. Who gives a crap about that? And like, I think Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously, you know, he went really, really high. But that's just good news for his fantasy outlook. I believe some of the stats that you mentioned, Dalton, like he has more career yards per route run, Scott Barrett pointed out, than like Dalton Kincaid and Zay Flowers. And like yards per route run is not everything, but he is a really good receiving back. So the landing spot is awesome, and definitely he brings some juice to the Lions offense. Let's stick in that division here, Andy, the NFC North. Luke Musgraves to the Green Bay Packers in the second round. Jaden Reed. Oh, my God. Jaden Reed is second round to the Green Bay Packers. I love that pick. Tucker Kraft. Third round pick. They also made some noise on day three by taking Sean Clifford. Didn't see that one coming as a top 150 pick. Grant DuBose in the seventh round and Dontavian Wicks on day three as well out of UVA. They loaded up on pass catchers now that they shipped Aaron Rodgers off. So Andy, any Packers takes here?
Yeah, Reed is by far, I think, the most interesting name. Obviously, they take a couple of tight ends, good tight ends, guys who were near the top of the ranks in the draft class. I don't know that either one of them is going to necessarily pop in year one, because in part because we don't know exactly what the offense is going to look like with Love at the controls. Mm-hmm. But man, Reed is immediately interesting. I don't know. Is it too disrespectful to like Christian Watson to say that I feel like Reed could challenge almost immediately to be the most fantasy relevant receiver on this team, you know, because we're kind of shaking the etch-a-sketch here. It's not Aaron Rodgers anymore. And whatever existed between Watson and Rodgers is hardly relevant to the current season. Can Jaden Reed be better than Romeo Doubs? Yeah, of course he can. Really fun player who has a clear chance to make an immediate impact.
Damn it, Andy. I mean, yeah, I had it all set up. I was going to go from you and toss to Dalton with like, hey, Dalton, you want a hot take? Like Jaden Reed could be better than Christian Watson this year maybe not this year, but even like going forward, I think he could be the Packers wide receiver one. Had it all set up, Andy. And then you had to get the one spicy thing I was ready to say today. You had to take it from me on the podcast. So, I mean, my God, I love Jaden Reed, dude. I think like you mentioned a comp, you mentioned finding himself in so many contested situations. I think it's very Terry McLaurin-esque that like McLaurin consistently finds himself and wins. He's obviously, I think like Jaden Reed's ceiling comparison would be Terry McLaurin. Other people have thrown out Stephon Diggs along the same axis of players, like great contested catch guys, despite being route runners. And like, that's the Terry McLaurin story in Washington. He's always high in the contested targets. He's always high in contested catch rate overall, but it's not because he's not a separator. It's just he gets thrown into these situations and quarterbacks trust him so much. I think that's the thing with Jaden Reed is that he's a route runner. He's a technician. He's a separator. He's great off the line of scrimmage. And as much as what Christian Watson did last year was awesome in fantasy, a lot of that after going back and charting him is definitely Rodgers driven. I think like there's a lot of revisionist history there that, oh, Rodgers ended up, you know, or like Christian Watson broke out and that was more on him. I think a lot of that is on Rodgers. Christian Watson is still a very developmental, limited application player. It's slant routes, it's post routes, it's crossers, it's goes, but it's not a lot of nuanced stuff after that. And he's still kind of a mistake prone player. So Dalton, are we being too hard on Christian Watson, who has a lot of ceiling and could be like a developmental leap type guy? Like maybe he takes a big jump this year. That's certainly within the realm of possibility, but Reed is just so polished. And I really agree with you, Andy. I think he could be the best Packers receiver. And who knows what that means, best Packers receiver.
Yes,
but Dalton, he could be the best Packers receiver from a real-life perspective and potentially fantasy perspective the next couple of years.
I've heard others say that about Reed as well. So the question here is, are we all ranking Watson too high? ECR is a top 20 wide receiver right now.
Yes.
He's certainly the type I personally have overdrafted in the past, you know, showing flashes. But he is very injury-prone as well. Aaron Rodgers isn't returning, and boy, I'm questioning, you know, people like you who pay attention to the route running. Maybe this is a big issue, and him being drafted as a top 20 receiver will look foolish if Reed has a chance to compete right away. You know, who knows how Love's going to be. So Yeah, that's my takeaway here. If you guys are saying that Reed, not only is he going to pass Dobbs easily, but he's in competition for Watson, and who was maybe a bigger product of Rodgers last year than we realized. That's the takeaway here, is that Watson's getting way overdrafted possibly.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the takeaway there. Let's move to the Texans. They take C.J. Stroud as a top two pick. They take Tank Dell in the third round. They take Xavier Hutchinson in the sixth round. Anyone have any big spicy things to say here about the Texans? I mean, C.J. Stroud probably starts from day one. He's probably going to be, you know, pretty good. He's got an NFL ready skill set. And Tank Dell is like a specialty player. I think Nico Collins is a big winner coming out of the draft. So anything spicy here on the Texans from either one of you guys?
I guess I just want to echo what Frank Schwab had said initially in his reaction on the Texans. Like, this is fun if you're a Texans fan. They obviously, the trade that they made to get the, you know, Stroud number two and then Anderson number three, man, they would have been in a perfect situation to draft JSN in the first round to go with Stroud. And then they would have been in on Marvin Harrison Jr. next year too, right? Like, that pick is probably going to be a pretty good pick. I can't believe they made that trade. I can't believe all they gave up. And I just fully agree with Frank that unless Anderson is not merely a Hall of Famer, but like an inner circle Hall of Famer, I don't see how this is going to look good. But he's great. Like, I don't know, maybe it'll work out just fine. I like Stroud a lot. One thing in his some of the scouting reports and some of the analysis that I've seen around Stroud suggests that he's not much of a runner. I don't know if that's going to be true. He just never had to do it at Ohio State. Why would you ever ask him to do it? The receivers were incredible. Everything surrounding him was incredible. There is a game on you know, last year's tape. They played Northwestern in like terrible field conditions. He couldn't throw the ball. And he was a really good runner in that game. Not that, you know, Northwestern was anything special necessarily last year, but I think there might be a rushing element to his game that we have largely ignored.
Am I just being contrarian, or should the Texans not have given more thought at remaining patient this year at the quarterback position? They're the co-favorites with the Cardinals to pick first next year, and the Cardinals already are locked in at Kyler Murray, and Caleb Williams looks like this generational talent. Now, again, you guys know more than me, so tell me if I'm crazy here, but that's probably the path I would have gone instead of all these trades up. And C.J. Stroud, I know you guys are going to hate me for saying it, but this S2 test is not an intelligence test, okay? It's regarding spatial awareness and reaction. And apparently, if you do well on it, you're not guaranteed to be a good quarterback. But there are no good quarterbacks who did not do well on it. And he bombed this spatial awareness test. Again, it's not an intelligence or intellect test. Or is this totally hogwash? And I knew that I'd get that reaction. So should I completely ignore that? And it's total bullshit and not even worth talking about again. And also the Ohio State quarterbacks. What about that? They're all or not.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I shouldn't say that with Andy here. But, you know, the Ohio State quarterbacks transitioning into the NFL has been shaky at best. That, too. So, and Caleb Williams just looks pretty damn awesome. So that's kind of my thoughts here.
I will just say I feel like Williams is really the best argument against going, you know, the route that they did. I think they chose the worst possible path. Anderson could end up being this like stellar Hall of Fame talent, and I could be wrong, but they chose a weird path here because they could have either gone him, preserved, you know, their other picks and then been in on Williams next season. Or again, they could have taken Stroud and then been in a position to take like Harrison Jr. last year. That looks spectacular to me. They chose an odd route here.
The only thing I'll say, and this is not to say that one is right or one is wrong or anything, but I said all draft season, like, that this whole idea that the Texans are not going to take a quarterback this year is just like, it's not going to happen. And there's a couple different reasons. No, like, number one, you're right, Dalton. They are like the betting favorite right now to be the second worst team, or like to get the first overall pick with the Cardinals. I mean, I think the Cardinals are in a much, much worse spot from a roster perspective than basically anybody in the league. But like, D'Amico Ryans is not going to go and be like, ah, shoot, man, we're going to stink this year. Like, we better just kick it to next year. Nick Caserio is probably GMing for his job. And the real reality is that the ownership is probably not going to stomach like another year of Davis Mills and Case Keenum. So
it's a perfect time, though, with a new coach. Just, I mean, what's the whatever. I don't know. I'll just teams, be a little just, patience, it's just man. So, if you get it's all about getting one of these, you know, four or five humans on earth who can be play the quarterback position at this elite level. And there's a possibility of one next year. I don't know. know, man. I think it's but at it's least a, worth but it's discussing, also a possibility, and they went the complete opposite route.
It's a possibility that Stroud is that guy. Like, I mean, he's a very, very good prospect. And there are definitely red flags. He's not a perfect prospect. But let me tell you what. We're going to nitpick maybe not Caleb Williams, but like Drake May next year. We're going to nitpick him to shit next year, too. Like, this is what we do with quarterback prospects. And next year's class is always better. This is the one time I think next year's class actually probably is better, at least from like a Caleb Williams and a Drake May. I like Drake May a lot. But it just. It's unrealistic for teams to sit there and say, like, we are going, unless you're the Cardinals, where your starting quarterback is going to miss. Like, that's the thing with Arizona. I think if Kyler Murray was going to start week one, they'd probably approach this very differently. They might tear it down a little bit. But we're going to talk about, like, the Titans later. They're a team that people want, like, people want the Tennessee Titans to tear it down. And they're not. They're just not going to do that because teams just don't do it. So I think the Will Anderson trade is very risky. But I also think the Texans can look at, like, we needed foundational players. And, like, now they have two foundational players in Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. Let's stay in that division, though. We've got the Indianapolis Colts here. I love Josh Downs as their third round pick. Oh, man, Josh Downs is just like what people wanted Paris Campbell to be. Josh Downs is actually that guy as the slot receiver. I love him as a player. I think the Colts have a sneaky good receiver core with Michael Pittman as the one. Alec Pierce as like a jump ball downfield guy. Now Josh Downs is the slot receiver running option routes, stuff like that. That's perfect. They have some potential breakout tight ends. They have Jonathan Taylor, who I think is probably like should probably be the second overall pick in redraft leagues this year because he's in such a good spot. But Dalton, with Anthony Richardson's rushing upside, Dalton, where do we rank him in redraft leagues? Again, hypothetically, he's starting week one.
Yeah, Steichen made it sound like that's the best way to develop him is get him on the field. So tentatively, he's my QB 15 right now just because of the rushing ability. I mean, obviously, the floor is low. If you're in super flex, you might treat that differently. But, you know, after whatever those dozens or so, you're comparing him to pocket passers, you know, Goff and Cousins and Rodgers and Geno Smith. So, yeah, why not go for AR and see if it hits? The rushing upside is certainly there. We haven't seen an athlete like this play quarterback ever. And so you mentioned Jonathan Taylor. I agree with you. He's my number two. I'm kind of siding with the boy. Richardson opens up the backfield big time. But as Andy astutely pointed out in his column, Richardson might also steal a bunch of goal line touchdowns. And that's absolutely a give and take situation there. But either way, Taylor healthy and coming off the down year and, you know, still you're going to get all the touches in this run first offense. So I love his fantasy aspects. And hopefully Richardson really does open up the lane for him, because that would be pretty sick.
If I could just say on Richardson, like, obviously his floor is he doesn't play right away, and that's a problem in fantasy, but as soon as he plays, he's a pretty high floor quarterback, because whatever we get from him as a passer is just kind of a bonus, because it sure looks like he's going to be one of the most interesting rushing quarterbacks in the league. I think there's a decent chance that he can lead the position in rushing scores, right? And that's where I think it gets problematic for Taylor. More than likely, what it opens up for Taylor is so good that none of it matters. But I think we're going to see a lot of goal line scores go to Anthony Richardson. I don't know. You see people describe him as like a bigger version of Mike Vick, which sounds pretty fun to me. I'm ready for it. I've got him as my number three ranked rookie for rookie dynasty drafts. I'd take him ahead of all the receivers. I just think the combination of, you know, high floor as soon as he plays and then stupid ceiling if he gets it all figured out with, again, a pretty good receiving core. This is everything we look for.
One thing about Jonathan Taylor, most I believe IAR looks to pass first and run second. Oh, he has this awesome athletic ability, but most mobile quarterbacks do not throw to their running backs much, which we'll get to with DeAndre Swift here soon.
Yep.
But so that could hurt Taylor too, the touchdowns and the targets. So hopefully it's offset by, you know, leading the league by wide margin in yards per carry, which is also possible.
Andy, all the things you said there about potential to lead the elite, the position in rushing scores, the ceiling, all this stuff. That's why, like, they're not starting Gardner Minshew week one. I don't care if he like theoretically knows the offense. You got the owner tweeting about, yeah, if we were the first overall pick, we were taking Anthony Richardson. Like, Jim Irsay is going to come down there and be like, all right, cute little training camp competition, but like that's over. We're going to put the guy out there week one. He's been desperate for a young, exciting quarterback. Just imagine like you've got Gardner Minshew out there and you have Anthony Richardson on the bench. It's just not going to happen. And I think that the floor is a good thing to point out because Richardson, the thing I've said is he's not really raw. He's just inexperienced. Like, he shows you high level quarterback stuff. And I just don't think like that stuff's going to get better by him sitting on the bench. Like, I'm with Steichen that he needs to get out there and get rolling and get experience and get those reps. And the rushing stuff is going to give this team a pretty good floor. And I don't know, man, I think the Colts could be pretty good on offense this year. Like, that feels like the thousandth time in a row that I've said that. And they were such a disaster last year, but they're going from like the outhouse to the penthouse in terms of quarterback ceiling play from damn Matt Ryan to Anthony Richardson here. All right, next team up here, Jordan Addison and Dwayne McBride for the Minnesota Vikings were the big offensive additions. I've said a lot about Addison already, so people know my take on Addison and everything. So Andy, Dalton, either one of you guys have a lot to say about Jordan Addison, who is in a pretty cushy setup there for wide receiver production across from Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I think he's the number one, at least for redraft. I think he's the number one rookie wide receiver, just landed in a beautiful spot. Like whatever flaws you think he had as a receiver, I don't think it's going to matter a whole lot with Jefferson on the field taking, you know, a lot of attention, a lot of responsibility. This just could not have worked out better. And I think I mentioned earlier, Adam Thielen ran the second most routes in the league last year. So now we've got Addison as like a volume guy opposite Jefferson. It's a great way for him to come into the league. I think this is really exciting. That's just a hell of a pairing. I think he's probably the number two target there right away.
New Orleans Saints, next team here. Kendre Miller, they take in the third round. That's probably the most interesting one here. They also take Jake Haener, 127th overall. And A.T. Perry, I'm surprised, fell all the way to the sixth round. I liked Perry as a, you know, developmental X receiver. A lot of development's probably going to take place for him to be like a relevant sixth round pick. So Kendre Miller here, boys, either of you guys have seen much of Kendre Miller? I kind of like his game. And I think this is a really interesting landing spot with Alvin Kamara. I mean, Dalton, we've talked a lot about Alvin Kamara being kind of outs with the team over the last year. And, you know, they add Jamal Williams. This seems to be just another reference there that they're not that excited about what Kamara brings at this point, or like they're very confident that he's going to be available this year.
I actually did watch a little Miller tape. He seemed impressive, but yeah, he's could be a terrific spot if Kamara gets suspended. Jamal Williams is 28 years old, just got paid. Yeah, Miller is an absolutely one of the best fantasy sleepers coming out of this draft, rookie-wise, rookie backs.
Yeah, Miller, a big winner here. I have found Kamara to be the most difficult rankings challenge in the early going, right? Because he hasn't been suspended yet, but he's probably going to be suspended. And then when he is suspended, it's probably going to be a long one. So what do we do with that? He's obviously been, you know, he's been declining for the last couple of years. I don't want to overstate that. Some of it is just that he doesn't have Drew Brees as his quarterback anymore, and he's just not seeing, you know, 100 targets a year. That is not out there for him at this point. That does not appear to be what this offense is. So like, that's gone. Now we're relying on Kamara being a volume rusher. That's not going to happen. And Miller's a really talented player coming off a great year. So I see no reason why he can't. And he's, you know, he's big enough that we can imagine a dozen touches right away, 15 touches right away, something like that. He and Williams could be a really, really nice one too. And then they can move on from Kamara, which would make all the sense in the world, because you're, you know, like, Kamara's getting up there in terms of mileage too. You're not going to want to pay him again. So I think Miller is a really interesting asset moving forward. If he's got it, you know, I was going to say something about him more as a long-term guy, but I actually think there's a pretty clean path to him having value this season.
Yeah. Just has to beat out Jamal Williams, who they gave like decent money to, but you know, I think Kendre Miller could be better than him. Philadelphia Eagles, next team up here. Look, the only pick they made of any offensive relevance was Tanner McKee at 188th overall backup quarterback prospect. But they did trade for DeAndre Swift, which is interesting. Dalton, you made the point, though, that most of Swift's appeal is as a pass catcher. And Jalen Hurts, I don't think, when you have the rushing ability that he does, and also you can say, hey, I'm going to throw this thing downfield to A.J. Brown, to Devontae Smith, or to Dallas Goedert. I think DeAndre Swift has to make a big impact as a actual rusher here, but he's competing with Rashad Penny. This feels like a backfield, Dalton, that we're going to discuss a billion times for fantasy over the next few months. And I don't know, it's a confusing one to sort out.
Yeah, Eagles were last in the league in running back target share last year. He has to deal with Rashad Penny. There's also Gainwell and Scott, and obviously Hurts at the goal line. So it's pretty much a terrible landing spot despite the team. Well, this team's going to score points and they have an awesome offensive line. It's unclear if Swift is good or bad as a runner. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really high in the avoided tackle percentage, breaking tackles, but some other advanced stats don't like him at all. Obviously his own coaches don't like him and say, you know, don't like his patience and his vision. So yeah, it's just a mess with the four-headed backfield and the premier touchdown score at quarterback getting all those short ones, and the rules remain the same for Hurts. So yeah, not getting the touches, I mean the targets, and the guy's always perennially dinged up too. So I'm going to be off Swift here. Typically I'm drafting him too high in fantasy leagues, but this is not great for his fantasy value. This knocks down Penny a few rounds, and you can get him come, you know, right now he was costing in about an 8th round fantasy pick. You can get him in the 10th, 11th now. I suggest doing that.
What a roller coaster for Rashad Penny's fantasy perception over the last few days. And like, he didn't even do anything. He wasn't involved in any of it. Right. There's all this speculation that they're going to draft Bijan and that would wreck him. And then it didn't happen. And we were like, oh, OK, that's nice for Penny. And then DeAndre Swift arrives on the scene. But I agree with everything that Dalton said, like that, you know, I think combined they targeted Sanders and Gainwell last year something like 50 times, right? Like, there's just no path here for DeAndre Swift to catch 75, 80 balls or whatever you might have hoped for with Detroit. I imagine that a big part of the reason that he got on the outs with the Lions, it was simply availability, right? He was hurt a lot, and then he would come back to like a limited role. Fantasy managers remember that all too well, and I completely understand the team wanting to move on from him. I don't know how you can possibly forecast a season that's any better than the one that he just had. So I'm not super bullish.
Yeah. I love that both of you guys were just kind of like, to this, because there are going to be some knockdown, drag out, all out fights on fantasy Twitter in July when people should be outside, you know, on a beach, beer in hand, and, you know, goofballs are going to be absolutely putting their gloves on for DeAndre Swift or Rashad Penny in this backfield. And come December, it's probably going to be like Boston Scott and Kenny Gainwell. So that's how that's going to go. That's my prediction for that. Seattle, the last team I have here in impact, in the impact zone, most impactful. JSN, obviously first round receiver. People have heard me talk enough about JSN. So if either of you guys want to talk about him, I think it's an interesting landing spot. The real interesting one is they take two running backs, Kenny McIntosh in the 7th round out of Georgia. Then the Seahawks take Zach Charbonnet, a 52nd overall, 1 year after Kenneth Walker is taken on day 2 for this team. So, Andy, Zach Charbonnet getting added to the mix here. I mean, number one, commitment to the bit, A+ work by the Seattle Seahawks there. But what do we do with this backfield now?
Yeah, this is the most Seahawks-y bullshit of all time. That was really disappointing. I still have Ken Walker ranked pretty high. I think he showed us enough as a rookie, and I think we'd probably be in agreement with Ken Walker. It wasn't perfect, and he did a little big play hunting a lot.
Yep.
But he broke them off a lot, right? Like, it worked. He's a really good player, and he battled through injury late in the season and still was handling 20 plus carries a game. He proved he could do it. I think we've seen Pete Carroll often enough default to like that full workload guy when somebody's rolling. So I just like Walker a little bit more than I like Charbonnet as a player. So it is an unnecessary complication. It is a complication that I was pretty irritated with. You might have liked to see a third day running back for Seattle instead of a second day running back. So a little bit of a bummer. I love the JSN pick. Again, I mentioned earlier that I have Addison ahead of him in terms of first year value, but you talk about a guy who can slide right into the sort of Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett tradition. I think he's perfect for it.
Walker remained a top 12 fantasy back on my board despite the drafting. On one hand, yes, he was probably the NFL's biggest boom or bust runner, and Charbonnet had the highest success rate of all backs on first and second down, and the rookie will definitely get some more work in the screen game than Walker. But Charbonnet was not a top 50 pick. And Seattle really made this move out of necessity. They were arguably the thinnest team in backfield behind True. Walker in the entire league. And Carroll's kind of this guy that makes his rookies earn it. Yes, Walker was a good second day pick, but how many running backs go outside 50 that, you know, are not going to make an impact right away? Seattle had a top 10 offense last year and added JSN. So Walker weirdly didn't score a lot of touchdowns toward the end last year, but he finished the season with three straight 100-yard games. I think it still wheels up for him and his top 12 guy. Yes, you'll be frustrated maybe more so than had they not added these guys. But again, there was no depth there at all. And someone's going to get some of those other touches and certainly work in the screen game where Walker doesn't excel. So I think he's going to get double-digit touchdowns and have a big fantasy year still.
Yeah, I'm definitely a little more hesitant with the Walker stuff. The fact that they were so insistent about Charbonnet's receiving profile, which obviously was Kenneth Walker's biggest weak point, overall as a prospect last year, that's a little concerning. You're right though, Dalton, that Kenneth Walker had a great season, but Rashad Penny was clearly running ahead of him, and Walker dealt with injuries in the offseason, but he was clearly running ahead of him early on in the season. So Charbonnet could definitely be a guy that's more the back half of the year, but I don't know. Either way though, awesome offense and pretty pretty straightforward great passing tree for Seattle. With that receiver core, this could be a sneaky, like, best fantasy offense in the NFL.
I think, real quick on JSN, I think at first glance, most people are like, oh, that's Kurtz Lockett, but he doesn't play the slot quite as much recently as most people expected, and his yards per route run over the last 3 years actually jumps a half a yard out wide. Metcalf, on the other hand, has been more reliant on volume. Like, his yards per route run is not even close to Lockett, so does this hurt him more? Does it hurt him at all? Thoughts, is it's a condensed target tree enough and there's no tight end or running back, so it's all going to work out just fine? Are you lowering Metcalf or Lockett at all, either of you?
Well, I will say, as the, you know, industry, perhaps world's premier Tyler Lockett defender and fan, that I'm with you, Dalton, that people think there's this gigantic gap between the two of them, and it's like, if there's any gap, it's narrow. And I honestly think that Lockett is a better player and better, like, Just a little bit better. And that's no shade to Metcalf, who I'm a huge fan of, but Lockett is a slightly better receiver overall. And that, yeah, I think that if one of these guys gets dinged, it could be Metcalf, who is a little more reliant on volume and just because of the style of receiver that he plays. So I love that take there, that if you're lowering Lockett because they added JSN, well, then you better, like, you're a hypocrite if you're not lowering DK Metcalf, because those guys are, if anybody's getting dinged from the target tree here, it could just as easily be Metcalf than it could be Lockett.
I love Lockett too, because he gets tackled like I would in an NFL game, just goes down immediately.
Hey, make business decisions, man. You're 30 plus years old, small receiver in the league. Is that's how you survive, okay? A couple other guys could take notes too.
Can I say, maybe we got to stop comping every small receiver to Tyler Lockett?
Because
there's just like, he comes up as a comp all the time, and you're just like, man, there's not a lot of those guys in the league, you know? But like, everybody who's 5'11 at 180 something pounds ends up getting comped to Tyler Lockett. And I don't know.
They're either Tyler Lockett or Antonio Brown. And like, yes, I mean, I'm definitely anti the Antonio Brown comparison. The only guy who I did the Lockett comparison for was Elijah Moore. But that hasn't gone that great necessarily. So I'm with you that we should outlaw the Tyler Lockett comp because it is all too common. All right, boys, we're at an hour 13 here on the pod or something like that. And we've still got an entire group. So we're going to have to go rapid fire through these teams here. If you've got something to say, do it. If not, we'll just keep it moving. We'll start here with the Arizona Cardinals. Maybe impactful. They obviously take Paris Johnson in the first round, trade up for him. That's a good addition. I put them maybe impactful because I think Michael Wilson, if they trade DeAndre Hopkins, which I know they say they're not going to, but they still might do it by the time week one rolls around. I mean, my God, please let's not have DeAndre Hopkins catching passes from Colt McCoy for half the year or whatever. Michael Wilson could potentially be a starting X receiver. I think he's got a pro-ready skill set, so he's at least interesting to me. Anything to add on this team, either one of you?
Surprised Hopkins wasn't traded. I'm surprised Hopkins wasn't traded. I took Hollywood Brown over Treylon Burks in a draft a couple weeks ago,
sense.
And I'm really regretting that now, though, if they keep Hopkins. But that's all my thought here is that that's going to affect a lot, because Hollywood, big time, his value will depend on that as well, and obviously the shaky quarterback situation the first half of the year.
All right, Andy, Chicago, they take Darnell Wright. as a first round offensive tackle. Love that pick there. He's probably their starting right tackle from day one. They take Roschon Johnson, add another name to a potentially crowded and, like, I mean, is anybody a superstar in this backfield between Donta Foreman, Khalil Herbert, and Roschon Johnson? I don't know. The veteran guys are efficient, but Johnson's going to get in the mix here, although they probably view him as like a potential special teamer as well. Maybe they talked about him as a third down back as well. Just that could be really messy. And then they take Tyler Scott on day three. He's a guy who got some Tyler Lockett comps, by the way, this year. Tyler Lockett's not falling to day three in the NFL draft, just to be clear. I don't have a lot of takes on Tyler Scott because I didn't get any 2022 film on him. I still might trying to hunt that down, but he could be their long-term Darnell Mooney replacement, I think, to me.
Yeah, if there's anything interesting about Scott, it's just that they have decisions to make on Mooney and Claypool. And so maybe Scott gets interesting in a couple years if Fields really develops. Johnson is plenty interesting to me. Not that I was super excited when the pick was actually made, because it was one of those picks where, like, it goes down and immediately they start talking about, you know, what are the two things I don't need to hear about the guy that we just picked? His intangibles and his special teams value, right? I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But then we started raving about him as a pass pro. Is really the weakness for Khalil Herbert, right? Like, yeah. And it is the thing that is probably going to keep Khalil Herbert from ever being like a full workload guy, if that was even out there for him this year. So I think there's a real, like, I don't know, it's entirely plausible that Johnson sees the field a lot. And if he does, he could sneak his way into like 750, 800 yards.
Cleveland Browns, next team up here, they add Dorian Thompson-Robinson, 140th overall on day three. But the big one here is Cedric Tillman, who I think could be their starting X receiver sooner than later. They have Amari Cooper, they have Elijah Moore, who I think are guys that you want to use off the ball or in the slot as flanker slots, one or the other. And I mean, Cooper can play a little bit of X receiver, but I think he's best used in one of those two roles. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a guy, like, he's fine, but I think that Cedric Tillman could be better than him once he develops coming out of that Looney Tunes offense in Tennessee. But most likely, I don't think he's necessarily gonna make a huge fantasy impact in year one.
Yeah, I put Tillman in the second round of my Dynasty rookie mock. I think it was a pretty good landing spot for him. Obviously, if Watson returns to being Deshaun Watson as a quarterback, he gets really interesting. I agree with you. Like, this receiving core, just, you can see how everybody complements everybody else. And Tillman beating out Peoples-Jones feels entirely possible.
Quickly, yep. a deep fantasy winner here is Jerome Ford, assuming they don't bring back Kareem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And D'Ernest Johnson is gone. So if Nick Chubb were to go down, Ford is impressive himself. And he's the clear backup there, with Cleveland not addressing any depth there in the backfield.
Dallas Cowboys, next team up here. We know they wanted a tight end. They get Luke Schoonmaker in the second round. Producer Colin put, as a big, big Cowboys homer, put this on the doc that it's very important to note that Dallas wanted a tight end who can play in line, and Michigan runs tight end, you know, pro style formation. So they don't see a sharp transition for Luke in their tight end schemes. Glad to see that Producer Colin's already on a first name basis with Luke Schoonmaker here. So that's all. That's awesome. But, you know, he's got like Jake Ferguson and Hendershot to beat out potentially there, does Luke Schoonmaker. So he could be a year one impact guy. They also take Deuce Vaughn, whose dad is in the scouting department. That was really cool. If you haven't seen that video, that's really cool to check out. And then Jalen Brooks is probably a special teamer. They took 244th overall. No big wide receivers of note, which I think is good news for Michael Gallup. But obviously, Luke Schoonmaker here is the big name. Either you boys got anything exciting beyond what Colin added about his good buddy Luke?
It would be cool if Deuce Vaughn is a thing. He's 5'5". Yeah. I think his BMI is the same as Bijan Robinson, if I read that right. But that'd be totally cool if he became a thing. And the key here, the Cowboys, fantasy-wise, is do they bring Zeke back? Which, unfortunately, Jerry Jones opened the door to. So that's the thing. Is Tony Pollard going to be a first-round fantasy pick or a few round? You know, not even close. That's the issue here with the Cowboys.
Get ready. I don't know. I know Colin's in the chat losing his mind again that, like, they gave Zeke's number away. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
He's gone. Okay.
I don't know. I'm still thinking he could get back on this roster. But right now, Tony Pollard is a huge fantasy winner and is probably, like you said, a first round pick. Next team up here, Denver Broncos. Only big addition of note is Marvin Mims. I like Marvin Mims. He could potentially be like a T.Y. Hilton light type of player. This is kind of a crowded receiving core, but I think all these dudes Tim Patrick, overrated. Cortland Sutton, overrated. Jerry Jeudy, overrated. I think Sean Payton probably agrees with me with everything that I just said, except I do think he's going to like Tim Patrick a lot. But Tim Patrick, weirdly, is like, everybody that covers the Broncos or like watches the Broncos tells he's like the best receiver ever. I think there's a little bit of myth making there, but yeah, Marvin Mims could potentially hit the field, but I think one of these dudes, either Sutton or Jeudy, has to get traded for him to do that.
I feel like the reason that they say that about Tim Patrick is because the other receivers they're watching are Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, right? Like two guys who just like the production has not yet matched the reputation, especially like post ACL for Sutton. Like this might just be what he is going forward. So I think it feels like it's a crowded receiving room because we talk about a lot of these guys in fantasy, but none of them have really had like some big splashy season just yet. So I think it's a pretty good opportunity for Mims.
All right, next team up here, Kansas City. This one's interesting. They took Rashee Rice in the second round. Wanya Morris, 92nd overall. Let me say this about Rashee Rice's reception perception. It was not good, especially against man coverage. Very, very inconsistent player. But somebody pointed out to me that he played basically all of last year with like a broken toe or something. So maybe that's why he couldn't get any separation at the college level playing at SMU. Not exactly like the stiffest of stiff competitions there. But I don't know. Obviously, it's a wide open depth chart there in Kansas City. But, you know, I don't know. The Rashee Rice pick definitely took me by surprise.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes seems to regard him maybe as a little bit of a pet, right? Like they threw together. There's at least some kind of connection there. I've unfortunately talked myself into Justin Ross this year. So that's like if I had to put my chips on one guy right now, it might actually be Ross.
I mean, dude, I think Dalton turns faster than Justin Ross based on his final year at Clemson. And then I don't know, man, that's maybe I would love to be wrong about Justin Ross, but I don't know. I'm talking
about that's no shade, by the way. Dalton, absolutely electric in the open field.
Oh, quick twitch athlete for sure. But I'm talking myself into Sky Moore. I know there's the Kadarius Toney bros are out there, but I do like Sky Moore as a guy who could be a nice flanker slot for them this year. But Dalton, anything on the Chiefs receivers?
No, just a lot of crowded now. Just obviously you need to pay attention to Rice with Mahomes there. But yeah, just a lot of targets to be spread around in that wide receiver room.
Las Vegas Raiders, next team up here. Michael Mayer was the second round pick at tight end. They traded up for him. He fell. I think anyone want to cape up for Mayer as the best rookie tight end in fantasy this year? I think it's possible, even if it's Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, Davante Adams is their kind of crowded receiver core. Anybody want to cape up for Mayer as a big time hit this year?
He'll be interesting just given how bad tight ends are. Yeah, no, I mean, I like Laporta more of the rookies.
Same. Trey Tucker in the third round also took me by surprise too, out of Cincinnati. LA Chargers, they take two TCU receivers, Darius Davis in the fourth round, as kind of a kick returner, special teams guy. Maybe he's their new Jalen Guyton. Like every, you know, three or four games, Justin Herbert throws him some outrageous post route because he's got a lot of speed. But obviously Quentin Johnston, the first round pick there. This is a receiver core. I would love to know how you guys see this kind of shaken out because, like, I think Quentin Johnson's going to send Josh Palmer to the bench, which is probably for the best. And then they've got Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. So either how you guys see this this receiver core playing out?
I feel like you have already made the essential point on Johnson, which is really like if he can emerge as a downfield threat for this team, that's probably his highest and best possible use. Because I don't need to see another year where Justin Herbert is at the bottom of the league in terms of intended air yards per target, right? Like he should not be like a six something air yards guy. We need like he's got a weapons grade arm and I want to see him use it. So I think it was a really fun landing spot for Johnson. You could easily imagine him having the sort of season where it's not a ton of receptions, but he gets a weird touchdown total off of it, right? So I'm this was a great spot for him long term.
Miami Dolphins, Dalton, your boy Mike McDaniel takes Devin Achane in the third round. It's a potential depth chart for him to climb there, Devin Achane, with Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. I mean, this is just like 49ers Central here, obviously, with these two running backs ahead of him, Dalton. But Devin Achane was apparently a guy that Chris Greer, the GM, said Mike McDaniel could not, you know, stop talking about. A little shades of like Kyle Shanahan and Joe Williams, especially like I'll lose sleep if we don't draft this guy. But maybe I'm just doing some 49ers like projecting here with Mike McDaniel and Devin Achane.
I think they've also since signed someone who could be their power back, because that they're currently using Jeff Wilson in that role. So it's just going to be another frustrating committee is what it looks like to me. But Achane, obviously a guy to pay attention to, and it would be obviously productive if one guy emerges. So he's certainly, you know, a guy to pay attention to, especially in PPR.
He's little, right? Like he's like 5'9" and 180 or something like that. And there's just no chance that this guy is on the, like, I've seen people write about how, oh, he's the only guy under contract beyond whatever year. There's no way that guy is seeing a ton of touches week in and week out. That's really hard to imagine. So then he becomes like somebody, and he's really fast, right? Like he's got total legit track speed. And it's nice that McDaniel is super excited about him, but it's really difficult to imagine him as more than like a best ball guy, right? Because you're never going to see the big play coming.
New York Giants, again, this is a beautiful part of like why post-draft analysis is so great. Cause like if the New York Giants had taken Jalin Hyatt where people were mocking Jalin Hyatt in like the first round, I would be like, no, this is horrible, horrible. But taking him in the third round, great. This is where you want to take Jalin Hyatt, a developmental deep threat receiver who could be like somewhere between Ted Ginn and Will Fuller. So this is a nice pick for them. I still think he's a guy who'd be better out of the slot just because he has so much work to do with press man coverage, but they have so many slot receivers.
They're all full on slot receivers.
So it could, I mean, what the hell is their three receivers just going to look like, Andy, between like, I guess it's Isaiah Hodgins, Darius Slayton, and then just a rotating cast of whoever's healthy between Paris Campbell, Sterling Shepard, Wandale Robinson, and then Jalin Hyatt. I don't know. And Jameson Crowder is there too. I always forget Jameson Crowder is on the roster.
It is like a team that thought they could corner the market on slot receivers and create some kind of edge. I have no idea. I do like Hyatt, and I agree with you. I think the price was right here. There's an opportunity for him here with that. I mean, there's just no stars in this receiving core, right? So like coming off a really productive season, he can get interesting.
Pittsburgh Steelers, I probably should. I waffled on the Steelers. I initially had them at little to no impact. I ended up moving them here just because I think Broderick Jones could be such a difference maker as a starting offensive tackle for them. And this is an offense that, you know, definitely needed better offensive line play. They add Darnell Washington, who slipped to the third round because both of his knees were medically flagged, which is a shame because he's a really interesting, exciting player. His presence could allow them to use Pat Freiermuth more as a split out tight end. I think Allen Robinson's going to fit in really nice as their big slot receiver. That's probably the role he plays for this team, but I don't know. Broderick Jones, I think, is going to be a big difference maker for this offense. But Dalton, you've heard me complain about Matt Canada's offense for a long time on the Stat Nerd Thursday podcast, and I will be doing that once more this year, regardless of Broderick Jones' presence.
Yeah, and they added a tight end, but you said it great. Maybe that's not necessarily even bad news for Freiermuth. Washington's basically like an offensive lineman, so maybe it does open up more routes for him. But yeah, Matt Canada's situation is the lingering problem here.
Maybe good news for Najee Harris, who, you know, gets an offensive lineman and maybe like a half an offensive lineman here with Darnell Washington. So that could be nice for a guy who struggled to, you know, with efficiency and stuff like that, but did finish last year very, very strong. All right, last team up here, Tennessee Titans. A lot of guys here. Peter Skoronski, great pick for them in the first round. I mean, you know, again, was it their biggest need? I don't, probably offensive line was a huge need for them. They take Will Levis in the second round, who I compared on the pre-draft shows to Ryan Tannehill in a best case scenario. Well, now he's behind Ryan Tannehill with the Tennessee Titans here. They take Tajay Spears in the third round. Love that, like, potential complement to Derrick Henry. Josh Weil, they'll take in the fifth round at tight end, and they take another offensive lineman late in the draft as well. So, I give this little, you know, maybe impact, because I think Spears could see the field in some situations, guys. I think Will Levis, if back half of the year, he could see the field. By the way, this is probably the most troubling receiver room in the NFL. I'm still not sure how good Treylon Burks is going to be. And he is like far and away the number one receiver on this team. Like Kyle Phillips, a slot receiver they drafted last year, who I do like as a sleeper, is like probably their second most targeted player at this point. Chig Okonkwo, big winner in this draft too, without a big receiver added. He's obviously their move tight end. So Titans are a weird looking offense right now. That's for sure.
I'm I like the spot for Spears. I think he can have some value as a receiving back right away. He, by the way, another one of those guys who blew up against USC's defense. He had 4 touchdowns and 200 rushing yards against him in a bowl game. Just like really wonderful tape, kind of a do-it-all guy who maybe down the road, if Derrick Henry's not there in a couple years, Spears gets really interesting as a dynasty play.
I loved Burks and Chig before the draft, and I really love them now, adding very little competition there. The jury's out on Burks, the route runner, but I still am ranking him as a top 30 fantasy wideout right now, given that opportunity. Who knows if Henry even ends up there and being the carry hog we're used to. And Chig had these crazy numbers, yards per route run through the roof, and now he's going to get a very expanded opportunity. So just very good news for those guys with the draft, just really providing very, very little competition.
Andy, thank you so much. Dalton, thank you so much. I appreciate you both for doing this show. That's going to do it for us. On Thursday, Scott Pianowski joins me to reveal his post-draft fantasy football team rankings on Thursday, an exciting new series we're going to be debuting on the pod here. Until then, we're out.